Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
Hey everyone, if we haven't met, my name is Daniel. Today we're going to start a brand new message series we're calling 5 Reasons Why. Maybe you're tuning in today and you're not a Christian, but you want to learn about faith a little bit more. Maybe you have questions about God or the Bible. You'd like to be more open to things concerning faith. Then this is going to be a great series for you. You're the reason why we do this series. So I want to thank you for tuning in today. I'm confident you're going to enjoy it and learn something from it. If you are a Christian, what I find after being a pastor for more than 20 years is that many Christians don't really know why they believe what they believe. And they have no idea how to defend their belief when someone asks. So this series is for you as well, to give you a solid foundation for your faith, okay? Today we're going to kick off with part 1 of 5 Reasons Why, and it is 5 Reasons Why God Most Likely Exists. You're going to find out in a minute why I put most likely there, so let's just get right to it. Many people today believe that our faith in God is just a blind stab in the dark. Even some Christians believe that to have faith means that you need to leave your reason, your common sense, your logic at the door. A very famous atheist, Richard Dawkins, says, "Faith is the great cop-out, the great excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. Faith is the belief in spite of, even perhaps because of, the lack of evidence." Now, is that true? Is our faith a cop-out? I don't think so. Some of the brightest minds in history, as well as in the 21st century, are theists. Many people don't know that the most famous biologist of all time, Charles Darwin, was not an atheist. At most, he was an agnostic. He actually grew up a believer in the God of the Bible. He did struggle with his faith though, and he doubted God. But despite this, in 1879, he is quoted as saying, "I have never been an atheist in the sense of denying the existence of a God." The most famous scientists of all time were mostly theists, like Isaac Newton, Kepler, Michael Faraday, and even Albert Einstein were theists, contrary to what Dawkins said. In fact, between the year 1900 and the year 2000, over 60% of Nobel Prize winners were theists. They were believers in God. The head of the Human Genome Project, Dr. Francis S. Collins, is also a theist. Actually, he's a very committed Christian. If you never heard of the Human Genome Project, it is one of the most advanced discoveries in science today. It is basically the blueprint for building a person. Genomes are made of DNA, a large molecule that looks like a long twisted letter. This is the iconic DNA double helix that you may have seen in textbooks or advertising. He says, "The God of the Bible is also the God of the genome. He can be worshipped in a cathedral or in the laboratory." That's awesome! Dr. Francis Collins was not the first person to say this though. Albert Einstein said something similar years earlier. Einstein says, "A legitimate conflict between science and religion cannot exist. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." So yes, it is possible to be religious and be a great scientist at the same time. The two are not mutually exclusive. So the question is there any evidence to our faith in God? I really believe so. Now, faith can't prove that God exists like we can prove that 2 + 2 = 4. But I can say the same thing about science. If you're a scientist, can you prove that God does not exist? You can't, can you? Even if you can explain everything about the universe, that still doesn't prove that God doesn't exist. Think about it. So, faith can't prove God exists, but science can't prove that God doesn't exist either. So the only thing that both the theist and the atheist can do is to provide evidence. No one is off the hook. If you're a theist, you need to show your evidence. And if you're an atheist, you need to substantiate your claim as well. The more you can provide evidence, the more likely people will accept your position to be true, just like in the court of law. You provide the evidence so the judge or the jury can make a decision beyond reasonable doubt that your case is true. So today, I want to provide you with five evidence or five reasons why I believe God very likely exists. That's why I use the word very likely, because all I can do is to provide you with evidence. And I want you to be the judge and decide for yourself after looking at these five evidence. But before I begin with my first reason, I want to speak to you, if you're watching this and you consider yourself an atheist, why you should at least reconsider your position. Now, this doesn't prove God exists. I just want to show you why you should at least reconsider your position as an atheist, okay? I got this idea from my friend John Bond, who wrote a great book called Christianity for Those Who Think It Is a Whole Lot of Crap. Now, that's a great book. Now, would you agree with me that you don't know everything there is to know? No matter how smart you are, I think you would agree with me that you don't know everything there is to know. Einstein said that even scientists as a whole were only on the fringe of knowledge. So my guess is that you, me, and most of us are on the fringe of the fringe of the total knowledge of everything there is to know. Let's give that amount of knowledge that we know a figure. Say the most brilliant scientists in the world know 10%. Now, you and me probably know about 1% of all there is to know. Would you agree? But say you know 5%. Today is your lucky day. I'm feeling very generous here. Then my question is this. Is it possible that God could exist outside your 5% of knowledge? Or to put it in another way, is it possible that God could exist in the 95% area of knowledge that you know nothing about? Is it possible that God could exist in that space? All I'm saying is, if you are an atheist, I think you should at least be open to the possibility that God might exist because you don't know everything. And if we continue this line of argument, would you also agree with me that you have not been everywhere you could possibly be? Most of you haven't even been to Hawaii, let alone Mars or Jupiter or Saturn. Not to mention you are bound by time. So you have not existed for all eternity. You haven't existed throughout all the time that has passed or will pass in the future. So, how can you know for sure that God doesn't exist if you don't know everything there is to know? You haven't been everywhere you could possibly be, and you haven't existed for all eternity. How can you say with confidence that an eternal being doesn't exist if you yourself are not eternal? How can you say an omnipresent being doesn't exist if you are not omnipresent? How can you say an omniscient being doesn't exist if you're not omniscient? In other words, you have to be transcendent yourself to know that a transcendent being like God does not exist. Think about it. Again, all I'm saying is, you cannot be sure God doesn't exist because you would have to know all there is to know, you have to be everywhere there is to be, and you have to live in all the time since the beginning of time, all the way until the end of time, to really know for sure that God does not exist. That's why I think you should at least be open to the possibility that God might exist. Okay? So with that preliminary, here are my five reasons why I believe God very likely exists. The first reason is the cosmological evidence, also known as the first cause evidence. The argument goes like this. Everything has a cause. Nothing just happens. Say we see a broken vase. A vase doesn't get broken by itself. Say it's hit by a ball. This ball doesn't bounce by itself. Say it's thrown by a boy. A boy doesn't just suddenly appear. They all have causes. Therefore, everything that is caused by something other than itself. And by logic, this cause cannot go back forever. It cannot stretch infinitely backward in time. It's logically impossible to not have a beginning. Otherwise, it would be like watching these dominoes fall and being told that nothing ever pushed over the first block, always been falling down forever backward into eternity. That means there must be a first cause. Therefore, everything that is caused must have a first cause, and that first cause we call God. But atheists ask, what about the Big Bang? Maybe the Big Bang is the first cause. No, it cannot be, because there was a point when the Big Bang did not exist. Scientists assert that the universe came into existence less than 15 billion years ago. The time is not really important. Say they're right, 15 billion years ago. What's important here is that there was a point where the universe did not exist. And again, whatever begins to exist has to have a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore the universe has a cause. And that first cause is God. But then atheists again ask, then who caused God? Maybe another God? Maybe. Then who created that second God? Another God? Maybe. Again, even if that were true, you can't infinitely regress forever. It's logically impossible. So you have to have an unmoved mover or uncaused first cause, and we call that first cause God. Anyway, you can research more about this if you're interested. That's the cosmological evidence. Let's move on to the second reason why I believe God most likely exists. It's the evidence of design, also known as the teleological argument. Now, this one is one of my favorites. To put it simply, the argument goes like this. When you see a design, that means there must be a designer. William Paley made this theory famous with his watch analogy. In his book Natural Theology, published in 1802, he said that if you find a watch in a field, you will know that it was designed intelligently. Why? Because the evidence of design is obvious. The symmetry of the watch, the functionality of the watch. Now, it is absurd to think something as complex as a watch doesn't have a designer. And he argues that our universe, our world, living beings, are similarly complex, if not way, way more complex than a watch. So just as we believe that the Sydney Opera House had a designer, the Eiffel Tower had a designer, they didn't just happen by accident or by chance, because there's a clear evidence of creativity and skills and design that demands there must be a designer. So we believe our complex universe, our beautiful world with its precise condition that allows life to exist, the symmetry, the color, the beauty, cannot just happen by accident or random natural selection. There must be a designer. Just look at some of these amazing pictures. The human anatomy is another great example of an awesome design. For example, human can be both strong and delicate at the same time. So far, there was no robot in the world that can lift 100 kilograms and also play Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. But probably the greatest evidence of design in creation is the DNA, the genetic material for every living thing on the planet. One of the startling discoveries about DNA is that it is highly complex informational code. That's the thing, it is so complex, molecular biologists use language terms like code, translation, transcription to describe what it does and how it acts. Information scientists will tell you that you can't have a code without a code maker. So it would seem that DNA is probably the strongest indicator in our world that there is an intelligent designer behind all of this. But that's not all. Even more startling than DNA is the discovery of the human genome, the genetic map of a person. It is not only the book of chemical instructions to create life, it is the technical manual and parts list as well. In other words, it is a complete set of coded instructions for making a person. I mentioned Dr. Francis S. Collins before, a very strong Christian and also the head of the US government-funded Human Genome Project. He said in an interview with CNN, "As the director of the Human Genome Project, I have led a consortium of scientists to read out the 3.1 billion letters of the human genome, our DNA instruction book. As a believer, I see this as God's language and the elegance and complexity of our own bodies and the rest of nature as a reflection of God's plan." Even atheists who desperately fear the implications of design keep running into it. Fred Hoyle, an English astronomer who many regarded as an atheist, many were not sure that he was. He's one of the people who discovered the Big Bang Theory. Looking at the design of the universe, including our planet Earth, he wrote, "Would you not say to yourself, some super calculating intellect must have designed the properties of the carbon atom, Otherwise, the chance of my finding such an atom through the blind forces of nature would be utterly minuscule. A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question. He insisted that the origin of the universe requires an intelligence. Those who deny the evidence of a designer are a lot like the foolish fisherman who fails to catch a fish and says, "Aha, this proves there are no fish." He doesn't want to consider the possibility that he might be a bad fisherman. Since science cannot measure the intangible of the supernatural, there are many people who say, "Aha, there is no creator." But to deny God exists is to deny the evidence of God's fingerprints all over creation. The third reason why I believe God most likely exists is the evidence of morality. Just as the evidence of design implies there must be a designer, the evidence of morality in human must imply the existence of a moral lawgiver. Let me ask you, where do we get the concept of fairness from? Have you ever complained that something wasn't fair? Who taught you to say, "That's not fair"? It's not limited to just kids who are not happy that their older siblings get to stay up later. We see the same thing on Save the Whales bumper stickers. Why should we save the whales? Some say because we ought to take care of the world. Why should we take care of the world? Because we just should. That's why it is the right thing to do. There's that sense of right and wrong again. Why do we believe murder is wrong? Why is lying and cheating wrong? So is stealing. Where did this universal sense of right and wrong come from? You know, the problem is a moral sense of right and wrong is not connected to our muscles or our bones or our blood. Ultimate right and wrong don't exist in measurable way. That's why atheists can't explain it. If we just evolved from the apes and there's nothing except space and time and matter, then where did this moral sense of right and wrong arise? Think about it. Again, the only logical explanation is, just as the evidence of design implies there must be a designer, the evidence of morality in human must imply the existence of a moral lawgiver. For Christian theists like me, the reason all human beings start out with an awareness of right and wrong, the reason we all yearn for justice and fairness, is that we are made in the image of God who is just and right. The reason we feel violated when someone does us wrong is that a moral law has been broken. And just as you can't have a design without a designer, you can't have a moral law without a moral lawgiver. So, every time we feel that old feeling rising up from within us is not fair, it is actually a sign pointing us to the existence of God. The fourth reason why I believe God most likely exists is the argument from desire. Famous author C.S. Lewis, who used to be an atheist, argues for God's existence this way. Every known human desire has a corresponding real thing which can fulfill that desire. Let me give you an example. If you desire for water, there is water to fulfill that desire. If you desire for food, there is food to fulfill that desire. If you desire love, there is love. If you desire affection, there is affection. So every known human desire has a corresponding real thing which can fulfill that desire. Now, the desire to know God and the ultimate truth is as basic as any human desire. Every people group from every culture throughout history have this desire. Therefore, God, the object of that desire, must exist. Dr. Nabil Qureshi, a medical doctor who is also a Christian apologist, said, "We all have a desire for eternal life. We know this because we look at death with a surprise every time it happens. Why? Everyone dies. Why are we surprised by death? Because we have this longing for life to continue. Dare I say, we long for this life to be eternal. We have this longing for meaning and purpose. So if we have this longing for something eternal, according to C.S. Lewis, there must be a reason for that longing, and that reason must exist. Finally, the fifth reason. For me, this is the reason why I became a Christian. This is the reason why I'm a theist. It's because I believe the resurrection of Jesus Christ is a real historical event. This is the reason why I believe in God. I like to quote from Andy Stanley, who makes a lot of sense when he says this: "If a man can predict his own death and resurrection and pull it off, I just go with whatever that man says." So if you believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that means you gotta believe in God as well, because Jesus points us toward God. So I want to encourage you to investigate and find out for yourself the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus, like Lee Strobel did. He was an atheist. He was an investigative journalist for the Chicago Tribune. He was a graduate of Yale Law School, so he's super smart. Anyway, his wife converted to Christianity, and so he set out to refute the key Christian claims about Jesus. Instead, what he found was compelling evidence not only for the historicity of Jesus Christ, but also for the resurrection of Jesus. So in 1998, he published a best-selling book, The Case for Christ, a journalist's personal investigation of the evidence for Jesus. So again, I want to encourage you to find out this for yourself, because as Andy Stanley says, if a man can predict his own death and resurrection and pull it off, I just go with whatever that man says. And Jesus definitely points us to God. Not only did he point us to God, but he points us to a loving, caring, gracious God who loves his creation, that is you and me. But unfortunately, because of our own sin, we are separated from this God. Our knowledge of him became dim. It became tainted. We don't see him as we should. That's why Jesus came to unveil God to us. And he told us this God wants to have a relationship with us. And my prayer is that you will discover this God and have a relationship with him. So there you have it, my five reasons why I believe God most likely exists. Again, I cannot prove to you with absolute certainty. No one can. But like in the court of law, the evidence to me is overwhelming. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ, I hope this has encouraged you that our faith is not just a leap in the dark, that our faith has a solid foundation that is supported by science, by philosophy, and by history. Tune in next week as we continue our Five Reasons Why series. And next week, we're going to look at five reasons why we can trust the Bible as God's Word. It's going to be really, really interesting. If you are blessed by this message, please like and share it with your friends who might find it helpful, and ask them to join us next week as we continue this series together.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.